From In Goal Magazine and NHL.com, Kevin Woodley joins us once again for Crease Lighting. Woodley, how are you?
I'm good, man. I thought you were going to say, especially if you like not getting a word in edgewise.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Yes. Yes. If you want to chug your beer during the answer, that's the guy to go to. That's very true. I love it. Hey, let's a few things to discuss. Let's start with Lauren Brossoit, who, of course, got into NHL. You know, his numbers in two NHL games, extremely small sample size, has looked good. He's been very good. He's an all-star at the American League level, and he just continues to develop on what I think is the proper development path. What have you seen? What have you liked in the development of Brossoit? Are there any areas you think he's still going to need to work on before he becomes a regular NHLer?
Well, I think that development path, ideally, it includes three full seasons in the American Hockey League. And I don't know that I can point to any reason why. It just seems to be a number that a lot of the goalie coaches that I trust, that I've seen have success. You can talk to Cam Talbot about the Rangers leaving him down there for 3 years with under Benoit Allaire's tutelage. Corey Schneider with the Vancouver Canucks, as good as he is now, it was 3 years in the American Hockey League for him. So there's no rush here. I know Brossoit is a third-year pro, but that first one was kind of mostly spent in the East Coast League. And so if you've got a guy like him who clearly has the ability, I think, to play in the NHL, sitting in the minor leagues, and as an option for a recall if you need somebody for a long stretch, I think that's your perfect world. Talbot is your workhorse, somebody who can come in every 2 weeks and spell him. And the longer you can keep an option like Brossoit sitting there, who can come in should Talbot go down or you need somebody who can go on a run. Like, I think that's your perfect depth chart for teams. So there's no rush here. As long as he can clear waivers for at least another season, you kind of take a look at him as a perfect number three option. That said, you know, there isn't a lot when you watch him at this point in these two games at the NHL level to suggest he's not ready. And what I love most about him is you've heard me talk about head trajectory. He's a guy who, maybe outside of Eric Comrie of the Winnipeg Jets, is, among pros, is kind of ahead of the curve on it. And you see it crystal clear in his game. I mean, he's been on it early through his work with the Oilers goaltending coach when he was with the Oil Kings. And you watch, I think that save on Brian Little, not the breakaway save, but there was a save, a couple minutes into that game where a puck came out from behind the net. I don't know if you remember it. And it goes right into the slot. And Little has a good look, and Little made a great shot. And you watch how Brossoit tracks down on that puck, keeps his chest upright, doesn't slouch over, but just kind of follows that puck head down on it. As he moves laterally with that play, doesn't open up, doesn't reach, doesn't chase, just tracks right on that thing the whole way. And like I said, Little got a good shot off from tight range, and Brossoit makes a blocker save, shows off a reactive element. Even from that close range, he's not defaulting to a drop and block, which a lot of guys, their block react threshold, at that range they're into blocking mode, and he wasn't. And so just a really nice example on a lateral play that required a lot of different skill elements for a goaltender early in a game, fresh off a recall, with all those situations, to play that one the way he did and still be able to react to a play from a shooter like that in that range. Lot of positive upside for him. The size, the technique is there. The only thing that's really lacking, I guess, is experience. And I guess what I would say is don't be in a rush to make sure that experience is at the NHL level. There's nothing wrong with having it continue for a while yet in the American Hockey League.
Agree wholeheartedly. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. Emergency backup goalie. We saw it again yesterday in Arizona. Now, I thought teams were supposed to have options ready, but most of them clearly don't.
Some do, some don't. There seems to be no written rule on this one. And to be honest with you, it's left me scratching my head a little bit, and because it does make sense. I mean, we see in Calgary, I saw a great story recently about that they've got a three-goalie rotation, including former NHL draft pick Todd Ford was a Maple Leafs prospect who's part of that three-goalie rotation. And so for every game in Calgary, one of those three guys has tickets and parking taken care of, so there's always somebody in the building. Having a guy nearby doesn't help you when the goalie gets hurt during warm-up. I mean, we looked to the Florida situation with Luongo and Montoya last season that kind of sparked the call for change, the call for a formal policy that made sure somebody was at the rink. having a guy half an hour away on call doesn't necessarily get them there quick enough. So some teams have gone to that extreme. Some teams like the Anaheim Ducks were doing that long before the Florida Panthers situation. Rob Laurie is a guy I've written about who actually was an emergency backup goaltender who made it to the bench for three different teams. He was the practice goalie for the Ducks. He dressed for the Ducks. He dressed for the Canucks. And then he dressed for the Minnesota Wild against the Kings. So he was a guy that was typically at the building. The Ducks had him there. Other teams don't seem to have that policy. Other teams, some teams like the Canucks, for example, the Carolina Hurricanes, for example, they have a designated emergency backup goaltender, or e-bug as we call it, within their team staff. The problem there is if you've got your trainer, the Canucks trainer, Dave Zarn, for example, who played up to kind of a junior A, junior B level, he helps them out in practices. He brings his equipment on the road with the team to be their emergency backup goaltender. But here in Vancouver, if it's the visiting team that needs one, you're not putting an employee of the Vancouver Canucks on your bench. And if, heaven forbid, the worst happens and he's got to go into a game, you're sure as heck not putting a guy who's on the other team's payroll into your game. Yet, talking to the Canucks, they don't have a formal policy in place where somebody else is at the building waiting for the visitor. So as much as every time we have a situation like in Arizona last night where I read that there's a new policy, there's a new rule, my understanding from the league is there is nothing formal. So it seems like it's more of a suggestion at this point, and one that maybe not all teams are following. And yeah, maybe it's easy to be a little haphazard with this one, but how many times have we seen the need for an emergency backup already this season? I guess maybe why they're not a little more careful is the reality is they're probably never getting in a game. I mean, it's really, if you couldn't get into the Florida game, Roberto Luongo came back from the hospital, had x-rays that we found out later revealed a fracture in his shoulder. And yet when he got into that dressing room and all the chaos and Montoya couldn't play and Robbie Tallis, the goalie coach, was getting dressed, Roberto came and he told me Robbie looked as, his face was as white as their road jerseys, the white home jerseys. Like, there's no way you're going in there, bud. You're going to die. So Roberto suits up with a broken bone in his shoulder. And of course, the other, probably one of the most famous ones here in Vancouver was, there was a kid named Chris Levesque who remains famous somewhat in Vancouver for being the emergency backup goaltender the night that Johan Hedberg was involved in a heavy collision trying to chase down a puck and a race for the puck inside the blue line. And it was great because the camera goes to this kid. He's a UBC third stringer. They dug him out of the library. They had to track him down to get him into the crease. Thought his buddies were playing a practical joke on him, wasn't returning their calls. They finally get him. He ends up on the bench. Camera goes to him, and he's chewing his gum so hard it looks like he might pass out. What nobody knew is that Hedberg kept playing that game, Jason. Found out a few days later, broke his wrist in that collision. So I guess maybe that's why it's haphazard, because even through broken bones, there's no way the goalie that's in net is going to put it on the guy who's sitting there who's never played an NHL game to actually have to come into one of these.
Yeah, it would be very difficult. But just imagine, like, if it was like 5 minutes left in the game, you're up by four, and the guy just stands on his head for 5 minutes. Well, it'd be awesome.
And here's the thing. These are the NHL stories. I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago in the Unmasked column for the NHL, for NHL.com. The best stories are in the minor leagues because this happens on a regular basis down there. Mike McKenna told me some absolute beauties. I mean, they had when he was with Las Vegas Wranglers of the East Coast League, their regular emergency backup goaltender, his day job was in a Neil Diamond tribute band. And he also had another situation in the American Hockey League where the emergency backup goaltender got in, stood on his head, and won the game, made 40-something saves and actually won the game, his only ever pro appearance. So it's not always 250-pound beer leaguers that end up on the bench in the minor leagues. A lot of these guys, actually in the NHL, these guys are usually ex-pros or ex-high-end college guys that can really play. But I guess at the end of the day, it's always a good story, just as long as they don't make it into the game.
Kevin Woodley joins us from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. is our weekly Crease Lightning segment. Now, Kevin, a few other ones to discuss. Dubnyk is in town with Minnesota on Thursday. And you look at, they've made a lot of changes. They've made the coaching change. And, you know, a lot of people could argue that Dubnyk saved Mike Yeo's job last season when he came in and just stood on his head in Minnesota. What does the coaching change mean to a goalie, if anything?
Well, in the case of the Minnesota Wild, the hope is it means a return to the structure that Dubnyk will be the first one to tell you played a role in his success last season. I mean, we heard a lot about it at the time, that as good as he was, it probably doesn't exist without a really solid defensive structure in front of him. And again, he'll be the first to tell you that. Goaltending never exists in a vacuum, and he benefited from a good system. That system play, it was solid right through to the All-Star break. Even as that losing streak was going on, it was because they couldn't get goals. It wasn't because they weren't defending. But after the All-Star break, that changed. And that's why the coaching change had to happen. The attention to detail in front of him, the way that system was being executed, or more to the point, not executed. I think they were averaging over 4 goals a game before they made the decision to fire Mike Yeo on Saturday. And that's where I think it will benefit Dubnyk. A new voice. Clearly the other one wasn't getting through anymore, but a new voice to reinforce some of the habits and some of the defensive situational stuff. And he's talked about it, John Torchetti talked about the attention to detail in their own zone. Zach Parise echoed it. It had slipped. Before the break, they couldn't score. After the break, they started to cheat to try and score. And once you start that, nobody's doing their job, and that's what happened. Everybody was just trying to do everybody else's job, and it became a bit of a mess in front of him. So the hope for Dubnyk and for the Wild is that they start to take care of their own end, and that the goals that weren't coming before the break start to come again at the other end. And sometimes that's just a matter of kind of relaxing, and you know, it's a cliche, but having fun again. Take care of the details in your own end and try and have fun in the offensive end. And you can see almost a weight come off this team being in that room last night compared to the way it was described heading up to the coaching change, and I guess they hope that continues.
James Reimer, a name that people are wondering about, the trade deadline, Bernier, what have you, with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So there's, of course, being the head trajectory has been something that has been reported that he's worked on. What else has he worked on to improve his game, and is there any other goalie that you see who's potentially available that a team should look at for adding? And is there a team that desperately should add a goalie at the deadline?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. There's not a huge demand. I mean, the Calgary Flames need a goaltender for next year, but they can probably take care of that more easily in the summer. And maybe a Frederick Anderson, who you'll see, I think you'll see tonight against the Ducks in Edmonton. Maybe he becomes available in the summer, although he's probably not right now. And so teams like Calgary, they need help. They don't need help right now. They don't need to give up assets right now because they're probably not going anywhere right now. The only real concrete demand that you're hearing about is maybe San Jose with a backup. As good as Martin Jones has been overall amid some ups and downs, Stalock just hasn't got the job done. And so, but I don't think you're looking at, a big, kind of a big splashy move like a potential number one like Reimer for the Sharks going out and making that move. As for Reimer, I actually wouldn't be surprised if he signs an extension. I believe those talks are already underway. At least they've been loosely discussed between Reimer's camp and the Leafs. I think that's his preference. I think like Devin Dubnyk, he recognizes that the structure there and the system there have been a big part of his success, and that being a part of a Mike Babcock coach team is a positive for a goaltender in the most part. And that said, being behind a Mike Babcock coach team usually means changing your game. And beyond the head trajectory, Reimer has changed his game. I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, that this hasn't been identified, but he kind of confirmed it when he was in town. I mean, he is playing more aggressively in terms of his positioning in Toronto right now than he has since junior. I mean, easily 2, maybe even 3 feet at times further out than he has been at any other point in his pro career. That's a big adjustment. It's an adjustment that can only take place if you trust a system around you to take care of the back door. In other words, if all the emphasis is on taking away the pass or making sure those seam passes don't get through, then you can really lock in and focus on the shooter. And that's not an easy change to make, especially for a goalie that's played deeper as long as Reimer has. It's something that the goalie coach there, Steve Breer, deserves a lot of credit for building that confidence. Again, the system deserves a lot of credit for allowing him to feel comfortable, like he can trust those players, and it has slipped since they moved Phaneuf, and you've seen some of those results. But I think also if they don't get a deal done, if he does end up on the trade market, you have to take an honest look at that if you're another team. Look at where he's playing, look at how he's playing, and ask yourself, can James Reimer play like this behind my defense? Do we do the same type of job that Mike Babcock gets out of his guys, taking away those passing options, that he can be the same goalie for us that he is for them? And the uniqueness of Babcock's situation, I mean, this isn't unique in terms of other teams Babcock has coached. You know, Jimmy Howard is one of the most aggressive goalies in the NHL when he played behind that system. And I've talked to him about how that, you know, that's a coaching preference. Even after Nick Lidstrom retired, he felt he could get out there because he trusted the system and the emphasis on taking away those lanes and those back doors would be taken care of the way Babcock demanded it be taken care of. So there aren't a lot of other teams in the NHL that I think can honestly look at Reimer and answer positively that they play a style he could be that aggressive within. Maybe the Carolina Hurricanes. Overall, they have a pretty good system. Their mistakes tend to be by young defensemen that lead to rush, mistakes in the offensive end that lead to rush chances. And Reimer's depth and retreat game, that is, you know, the way he's moved towards that this year, may actually be better suited to that. But it's a pretty short list of teams that are going to provide the same type of defensive structure that's allowed James to succeed in Toronto this year.
Gavin, it'll be very interesting over the next 10 days to see what happens at the trade deadline. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Jason. Talk to you next week.